Federal prosecutors have dropped all charges against former Illinois Congressman Aaron Schock. As long as he pays back the IRS and stays out of trouble for 6 months, he'll walk free with a clean record. Plus, tornado season is on the way, although really they can hit any time of year. We'll check in with the town of Taylorville to see how they've recovered after a tornado hit their community last winter. And the U of I's Black Chorus joins us. They were first founded in 1968. They've got a performance this weekend, but we're getting a sneak preview.
The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WCBU in Peoria.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. There's lots of news going on this week, including very surprising news yesterday out of Chicago involving former Congressman Aaron Schock. He once represented Central Illinois in Congress. He was just 27 when he first took office, and for years, the Republican Party saw him as a rising star. You might remember that 6 years later, Schock was in the news for another reason, corruption scandal. And as more reporting came out, the list grew longer and longer. Whether it was decorating his office like Downton Abbey or using taxpayer money to fly on private jets with wealthy donors. In late 16, Schock was charged with 24 counts, including wire fraud, making false statement, and theft of government funds. But yesterday, federal prosecutors agreed to drop all of the charges. Chris Kergard is with the Peoria Journal-Star as an associate political editor. He's been covering the story from the beginning. He's on the line with us now from the newsroom in Peoria. Chris Mooney is also with us. He's with the University of Illinois Chicago, longtime political analyst for us. Chris, Christopher, thank you both for being with me this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chris Kergard, before we get to some of the backstory, I wonder, as someone who's been following this from the beginning, how surprised were you at the news yesterday, this routine hearing that turned into not so routine at all?
I've been calling it for people a dramatic anticlimax. Dramatic in that it's certainly not the kind of thing you expect coming out of what would appear to be a routine hearing. But at the same time, with what we've seen over the last couple of years in this case, with allegations of federal prosecutors who engaged in some potential misconduct themselves with the grand jury and first said, no, we didn't, and then in court hearings had to take it back and admit, oops, there are some questions we asked that we absolutely should not have under the rules that we play by. A lead prosecutor removed, U.S. attorneys, interim U.S. attorneys going through the office and the change between presidential administrations, the judge being removed for unrelated malfeasance in a separate case.
Right. That judge was originally in Urbana, correct? And then the case was moved to Chicago, Chris?
Case was moved to Chicago, and then it was given to separate prosecutors in Chicago to take a look at. It had all the signs of being a troubled prosecution for the last year or year and a half. And you had to wonder what a new, fresh set of eyes was going to look at on the case, and the fact that Schock had arguably the best legal team that his campaign money and personal money could buy. Those two things together made you wonder whether or not there weren't going to be issues with prosecuting the case.
Chris Kergard, I know you spoke with the former Congressman Schock yesterday after all of this came out. What did he tell you?
We talked a little bit about his political future, and despite some of the headlines that are out there of him not ruling out a return to politics, that's certainly true. He is not ruling out a return someday. Schock is 37 at this point, going on 38, and he has a lengthy career in any employment ahead of him. I did not get the impression he was eager to jump back into the political game. What he told me is that his time in office from age 19 on the school board in Peoria all the way up through the legislature and then Congress meant that for most of those 14 years, his weekends were not his own. His evenings were not his own, and that it came at some cost to him personally. So he's eager to have a little bit of time to enjoy not being in office and not having obligations, and is exploring ways that he can still serve and be part of public life that maybe don't involve elective office. And he's not getting specific on what that might be, but I certainly would expect sometime over the next decade or two or three that we're going to see that name again in news releases and maybe on the campaign trail.
Chris Mooney is also with us. Chris, what was your reaction to the news yesterday?
Well, it was a surprise to me. I guess I hadn't been following as closely as Chris had, of course. But usually when the feds come after you, you better start booking your reservation in the big house, because they got a lot of resources, and it's hard to beat them. Talked to Rob Blagojevich about that. But in this case, it sounded like because of some problems in the prosecution, then they found a way to get to throw this out. Now, the other reaction I had was, how is this case distinct from the Jesse Jackson Jr. case, for which he and his wife both served, a year was in prison. I'm not sure about the details on that, but I think that's a question that, given our criminal justice system and the racist bias that we see in it, that I think some people are going to raise that question.
Chris Kjærgaard, so prosecutors have agreed to what's called a deferred prosecution. Can you tell us what that means?
In essence, the agreement there holds that if Schock complies with all of the other terms in that agreement, which includes paying back money to his congressional campaign fund, paying back the IRS what he owes them for income that he did not properly declare on his taxes, paying his campaign committee, paying a fine to the Federal Election Commission for errors in filing, and if he cooperates in the production of a variety of other documents and does so over the next six-month period and otherwise keeps his nose clean during that time, then they will agree to wipe away all of these charges. There is still the outside possibility that if he, for whatever reason, does not comply to the satisfaction of prosecutors with that agreement, that they could move forward with the charges. Under the circumstances, that seems unlikely, but they're holding it out there as a possibility to ensure that compliance.
And so can you remind us, Chris Kjærgaard, he was initially charged in November 2016 with 24 criminal counts, everything I mentioned at the top of this, mail-in wire fraud to theft of government funds. What were some of the other ones?
Some of the other ones included allegations that he had misappropriated funds that were given by locals to participate in a fly-in where local Chamber of Commerce and Rotary Club members and folks like that fly out to Washington, D.C. and do a meet with your congressman day or day and a half. Concerns about mileage reimbursement through his campaign accounts. Further concerns about whether or not he had taken tickets that he bought with his political funds or personal funds and then resold them at profit to himself. Two of those charges were tossed out on technical grounds back in 2017. The remaining ones, including issues over the mileage reimbursement, were still there. And it's interesting because those charges themselves are being wiped away as criminal charges. But in the document that Schock signed as part of this pretrial diversion, he is agreeing, without accepting criminal responsibility, he is agreeing that through errors, inattention to detail, et cetera, that he did indeed engage in some of those acts. And that's the crux of reimbursing the campaign fund for the mileage that was inappropriately taken. He's simply admitting it as an error rather than a criminal act. Same thing with the taking tickets that he purchased as a public official at face value for the World Series, for the Super Bowl, and then reselling them at a profit to himself. He is admitting error but not criminal liability in agreeing to reimburse the IRS for not claiming that as income.
Chris Mooney, when we think about the career of Aaron Schock, I guess we should point out we always hear the title rising star of the Republican Party kind of attached to it. We should point out, actually, he was elected to the Peoria School Board at age 19. I wonder what that role of how much you think that may have factored into the decision for prosecutors to now drop all of these charges.
The fact that he was elected so young?
Or no, that he was kind of considered a rising star within the Republican Party and kind of where he is now.
I would suspect that that probably had more to do with the targeting of the prosecution than the fact that he got off. I think I don't know how. I mean, again, he was a guy that actually there's a lot of parallels here with Susana Mendoza. They both came up at the same time. They both came up really young. The difference is, they're really, really smart, really, really energetic, very friendly, good-looking people who were out there right away, involved, and everybody was respecting them. The big difference is that Aaron Schock went out there and took it on himself. He just
The social media presence that he had was obviously a little bit different from Comptroller Mendoza as well. Not just the social media, but posing shirtless for, was it Men's Health magazine?
Yeah, I mean that comes kind of later. I'm talking about in the early days when he's the youngest guy in the General Assembly. He's the youngest guy in the school board. He's the youngest school board president. He's the youngest everything, right? And he took that school board. Not only did he win the school board seat at 19, but it was a write-in campaign, which is super hard to do. And then he took on a long-term Democratic incumbent for the state house seat, which is also a really hard thing to do. Obviously there's a lot of luck in anybody's winning an election. He was in the right place at the right time, but still it was a lot of energy, a lot of taking the initiative, very much an entrepreneur.
Chris Mooney, we've had you on this program before to talk about the problem of corruption in Illinois. It's kind of our state reputation, which unfortunately is pretty well deserved when you look at the amount of politicians. You mentioned Rod Blagojevich earlier. I wonder what you think this case says and this dismissal says about Illinois and our culture of corruption.
I don't know. I mean, the things that he has admitted to were mistakes, or I didn't know I couldn't use my campaign money to buy a bunch of World Series tickets and then make a profit on them. He's like a scalper. I mean, that's pretty sleazy stuff. Is it legal? Is it not legal? They're working that out in the courts. But that's the sort of thing. When people see stuff like that, it's just another brick in the wall, of cynicism around the state. And the fact that he's getting off, maybe that makes him even more cynical. And like I say, especially people.
Does it make you even more cynical?
That's probably difficult to do. So, yeah, I got a low bar or a high bar on that. But thinking about the people in the 2nd Congressional District, people on the south side of Chicago who saw Jesse Jackson Jr. go to prison for a very similar charge. I'm sure the details are different, but,
insert prison time, correct. Yes.
What does that say to them? Right. And is it going to be causing a revolt? No, but it's another that's the way the system stacked against me. That it's all about the politicians. They get what they want So it's not good, even though he got off. In fact, maybe even because he got off, it's not good for our internal feelings about ourselves, I guess.
Chris Kiergaard, we've just less than a minute left, so I wonder if you could just briefly answer. So he wouldn't say whether or not he's thinking about a political career. Too soon to say that right now?
Too soon to say that right now. I think this is all just sinking in for him after a long, expensive four-year legal fight and taking it up to Chicago. And I guess one thing I'd close on, too, is that this ended up being decided by Northern District public corruption prosecutors who are pretty experienced at deciding what they can and can't prosecute and have a pretty solid record of going after R's and D's alike when they think they can make the case on something.
All right. Well, that's Chris Kjærgaard with the Peoria Journal-Star. He's been reporting on this, as we've said from the beginning. We will tweet out Chris's stories. I want to thank Christopher Mooney for being with us as well. He's with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He also teaches state politics at UIC. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Sunday's violent tornado in Lee County, Alabama, is being called the deadliest twister in nearly 6 years. 23 people were killed. All of this, despite how well forecasted the tornado was, but it was a really big one. Now, many onlookers are wondering what went wrong. Also, what went right, especially as tornado season is beginning here for us in Illinois. Mike Cruz knows about some of these issues firsthand. He's the fire chief in Taylorville, where dozens of people were injured after tornadoes hit the county last winter. He's on the line with us now from Taylorville. Eric Snodgrass is also with us. He's a principal atmospheric scientist at Nutrient Ag Solution, also with us from Champaign. Eric, Chief Cruz, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Sure. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you.
Chief Cruz, I just wanted to ask you, first of all, I know it's been a couple of months, but how the rebuilding process is going for you and your neighbors in Taylorville from the tornadoes that hit in December?
No, it's going exceptionally well. We believe that we've hit the gold standard on recovery. In fact, it's a little challenging now to go out to the southern part of town and find where the damage is. So it's interesting to see the new construction and the rebuilds. And really, in reality, we're going to be a different community, a newer community than we were a year ago. And as you know, as we look forward to that from December 1st. So it's, of course, people had some significant struggles. And but with the rebuild, again, it's really, in a very real sense, in a tangible sense, revitalizing our community.
Are there priorities that remain then, or it sounds like everyone's pretty much back on their feet?
I think for the most part, yes. We have funds set up to help people that had that were underinsured or had no insurance at all, and that's being managed by the Taylorville Missions, and they have a mission statement that they'll help those folks that do have those types of struggles. We also were able to capture a federal program to where folks that needed the extra money for those same reasons can apply for a very low-interest government loan.
Chief, I wonder, as you watch the news coverage of what people in Alabama went through this weekend, of Georgia and Alabama, because this tornado was huge and it was on the ground for so long, I wonder what resonates with you, what you were thinking.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's certainly something I was watching closely and following the footage. And, you know, I had to be honest that there was some disappointment in there and the and some of the audio and some of the video that I had seen. And one particular, there was a gentleman that was filming the tornado at a second-story home. And he had his camera rolling right up to the point of impact. And, you know, the thing is, we do our best to try and prepare. We have exercises to get the first responders ready to go. Of course, we have the outdoor siren systems. But at some point, personal accountability has to come into play. And that's probably the weakest link. And, you know, we can only do so much. But the devastation there was similar to ours, obviously. And they were certainly much, much less fortunate to have all the deaths that they did. But I did hear a couple of reports. They said the warning time was 5 minutes and some was 30 minutes. Now, we were very lucky to have 45 minutes lead time. But, you know, I would just have to reemphasize that once those sirens go off, once the National Weather Service is saying taking cover, that's not the time to get your cameras out and start to videotape and take pictures. That is the time to hunker down and exercise your home plan.
That's Chief Mike Cruz with Taylorville. Eric Snodgrass is also with us, a meteorologist. And Eric, when we think about the lead time that happened in Alabama, I think oftentimes when there's a natural disaster, we do tend to focus on what went wrong. But in this case, I wonder if we can talk about what went right and how well forecasted this was and how much time people had.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually incredibly well forecast by the National Weather Service and the Storm Prediction Center. Up to about 4 days in advance, there was already discussion among meteorologists that went straight to the public just saying, hey, this is a region that we got our ingredients coming together to make for a severe weather outbreak. We need to keep a close eye on this. And even on the day of the event, you know, the warnings went out, you know, every storm was warned. And as this, you know, as it came through, we just have to remember that when you have a tornado that's a mile wide producing 170 mile an hour winds, we're going to see the kind of destruction that we did see, unfortunately. And even with some of the best preparation, we're still going to have issues where there are fatalities. People will be injured and die just because we're dealing with one of the most powerful forces in nature. But in terms of it being a well-forecasted event, I look back on it and say, I'm incredibly impressed with the performance of the National Weather Service and the Storm Prediction Center.
But to Chief Cruz's point, when there is a perfect forecast, sometimes that isn't always acted upon. And I wonder what you think about how the public's interpretations of forecasts, how people who are not meteorologists or atmospheric scientists are able to, how good we're doing a job at listening to what weather forecasters are saying to us.
You know, I think there's a longstanding problem with weather warnings in that in the past, when we didn't have the technological advances that we have now, we didn't have access to such incredible computer modeling and then, of course, observations. So I'm talking about radar, satellite, things like this. We had a relatively high false alarm rate, and that was because the National Weather Service would often play the better safe than sorry card when we start to see severe weather break out. So there's kind of a boy who cried wolf mentality in some sense. But in reality, the technology we have now, we've been able to increase warning times to be substantial, sometimes up to 30-plus minutes. In fact, there's a lot of discussion with psychologists and meteorologists saying we shouldn't increase that any longer. The longer we increase that, the more people will actually think of it as less of an immediate threat. But, you know, in the end, it's we need to get people to have a plan, make the right decision at the right time when severe weather is in your area. And to, you know, every time assume that it's going to be the worst and do the thing that you're supposed to do, and that is to take shelter and to honestly not run out and videotape the thing. You know, you don't need to make this a YouTube sensation. We want you to be safe and stay alive through these events. So it's changing, and it's changing because of technology and our ability to remotely sense these events and then warn them with a lot of lead time so that people can take shelter.
Chief, we just have about a minute left, but I just wonder, as we approach this tornado season, the peak of tornado season for us here in Illinois, that's March through May, I wonder what you're thinking about this season that may be different from last year.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we're certainly focused on, we are talking about the severe weather season, but let's just remind ourselves that our tornado was in December 1st, during winter weather. Let's look back to Washington when they were struck and lost 1,000 homes. That was in November. So we had to be prepared all throughout the year. And that's the message that we are reinforcing locally more heavily than we have before.
That's Taylorville Fire Chief Mike Cruz. I want to thank atmospheric scientist Eric Snodgrass. He's now the principal atmospheric scientist at Nutrien Ag Solution in Champaign. Both of you, thanks for taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it.
Okay, sure. You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
The University of Illinois Black Chorus has been on campus since 1968. Founded originally by 4 students, it's since grown to dozens of members, and they regularly perform the music of African Americans across all genres. Black Chorus is also a 1-credit class at the University of Illinois, and in addition to performing, students learn more about the history and people behind the songs they sing. This week, the U of I Black Chorus is hosting a symposium on Black sacred music on the Urbana campus, and it all culminates in a concert this Sunday at 5 o'clock at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. But We have a chance to have a little preview here because they've stopped by our studios to tell us more about that and to perform some music for us. Brianna Tyler is the TA and a master student in music education. Michaela Odom and Jerry Bofor are seniors. Michaela's majoring in psychology. Jerry's majoring in business. And they're the president and vice president of the chorus. All of you, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Michaela, I wonder if we can start with you. How long have you been a part of Black Chorus?
I have been a day one Black Chorus member as soon as I stepped foot on campus back in 2015.
So home for you, Michaela, is Naperville. Jerry, for you, home is in Chicago in Rogers Park. Was this joining Black Chorus something you intended to do before you got to campus?
I kind of joined Black Chorus by accident. The way that happened was sitting down for registration. One of my friends was next to me and she was already involved with the choir. And she was telling me, oh, maybe you should join Black Chorus. I was like, okay, I'll just give it a try. And then I just signed up for the class. First day, I just came in. And then the rest is history.
Brianna, so this is a chorus, and this weekend you're all participating in a symposium on Black sacred music, but you sing music from all different genres, right?
So Black Chorus focuses on the African-American music tradition, so it's not just gospel. It's spiritual songs. It is gospels included, but there's also soul, funk, R&B, blues. We've even done some hip-hop. We've had some rap in some of our concerts, especially in our Mom's Day performances. We have one coming up on April 6th. We always do a tribute section. So in that tribute section, we dedicate a portion of our performances to pop stars and popular music that's outside of the sacred music tradition. But we predominantly do, in our first half of our concert, usually focus on that sacred music, Black sacred music.
Brianna, this is actually also a one-credit class. Can you tell us a little bit more about the academic side of this?
Black Chorus is an extremely rigorous academic course. So I think a lot of people join it thinking that, oh, we're just going to come and sing some songs. But you learn a lot. You learn a lot about the history of the music, how it functions in society today, and also how it functioned in the past. Dr. Davis is amazing. She's just a fountain of information, an amazing resource to have, especially for those of us that are music educators. She tells us how to authentically and accurately teach the music, everything down to the pronunciation of the words. You learn so much about performing the music and studying it as well. That is just something that you don't get in a lot of choirs.
Michaela, did you grow up singing in a choir in church?
I did.
And Jerry, how about you?
I joined Chicago Children's Choir for like a really small amount of time, and then I never really picked it up back up till high school.
Okay, but Chicago Children's Choir is pretty rigorous, and you learn a lot there too, I know. Michaela, what have you learned in chorus that you maybe didn't learn being part of a church choir? I wonder what you've learned about the history and the tradition when we're thinking about sacred Black music in this country.
I've definitely just learned more about the meanings behind the songs. I think in church, often we would learn the song, especially in youth choirs, we would learn the songs and they'd say, praise God. And that would be kind of the end of it when it comes to understanding what the song is about. But in Black Chorus, we understand the setting that the song would take place in, how it would be performed or how it would be sung in the moment that it was created. So it really just gives me kind of a good foundation to understand the music.
Okay, so we're about to hear you all performing, not just the three of you. There's not eight or nine of you guys with us today. I Open My Mouth. Let's take a listen to that.
I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. I will go, I shall go, I will go, I shall go, I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be.
You're listening to The 21st, and that is the U of I's Black Chorus. They just performed I Open My Mouth. In studio with me is three of the members of U of I's Black Chorus. Vice President Jerry Buffor is here with us. Jerry, so there's about eight or nine of you guys with us today. How many people are in the chorus in total?
I can't give you the exact number, but it usually falls within the 80 to 90 range.
And we were just hearing I Open My Mouth, and Michaela, before you guys sang that, you were talking about how you've learned a lot about the music. And I wonder what you can tell us about that particular piece to provide a little bit more context about it.
I Open My Mouth to the Lord is actually a field holler.
Field hollers is a specific subset underneath the broader category of spirituals. So with spirituals, you have so many different subcategories. You have jubilee, sorrow songs, and this one is a field holler. So it's a work song. They would sing it out in the fields while they were working. And when we go into this ripple effect of, I open my, and all the different parts take a place, you can hear it's supposed to be an effect where you have this idea in your head or this image in your head of the slaves singing it across the plantation. And so it's starts over here, and then another group picks it up when they hear it, and then another group picks it up when they hear it just across the field in general. So that's why it's called a field holler. It starts out in the field, and they start singing it, and then it just picks up, and it comes into this layered effect because people, as they hear it, they're singing it in different pockets of time.
That's Brianna Tyler, who's the TA with the U of I's Black Chorus. Jerry, I wonder what you've learned about the history of African-American music. It's kind of a big question, but I wonder what you have taken away from the things that you have learned in Black Chorus.
We pretty much go all the way back from the 1800s to mainly now, and we really see the continuum that is African-American music. And it does start with the field hollers and the spirituals. Eventually, we get to the traditional gospel, which has maybe some roots within the blues. And then from there, we get rock and roll, we get rhythm and blues, we get soul, funk, hip hop. From there, just the list continues.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we will hear more from the U of I Black Chorus. They're performing this Sunday at 5 o'clock at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. We'll have information about that at our website at 21stshow.org. Stay with us. Just after the break, we'll hear more from three members of the chorus who are with me here in studio, Brianna Tyler, Michaela Odom, and Jerry Buffor. And we'll hear a couple more songs. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and my guests are three members of the University of Illinois' Black Chorus. Brianna Tyler is a master's student in music education in the class TA. Michaela Odom and Jerry Buffor are both seniors, and they're the president and vice president of the chorus. Lots of folks are actually performing this Sunday at 5 o'clock at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. As we've heard, there are about 80 people in the group total. There are about nine or singers here today to give us a taste. Jerry, can you introduce the next song for us? I believe this is called Joy.
So this song is Joy, and it is a contemporary gospel song. You get to hear our illustrious graduate assistant, Brianna Tyler.
So let's take a listen to Joy.
There's beauty in my brokenness. I've
got true love instead of pain. There's freedom though you've captured me, and I've got joy instead of mourning. There's beauty.
There's beauty in my brokenness.
And I've got true love. Never been so free, caught in your love for me.
You love me.
I never been more secure, knowing your heart, Lord.
That was Joy from the U of I's Black Chorus. You heard Brianna Tyler as a soloist. She is a TA. She's a master's student at the University of Illinois and in studio with me talking about all of this. President of U of I's Black Chorus, Michaela Odom, is also with us. Michaela, you all will be singing at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at 5 o'clock on Sunday. What kind of music are people going to hear?
The focus of the symposium or the concert is Black sacred music. So we are going to do everything pretty much from spirituals to gospels. We are going to save the pop tribute for our Mom's Day concert, but you will get a taste of Black sacred music.
Both of you, Jerry and Michaela, Vice President and President, have been involved with this for your entire time on campus here, your entire 4 years on campus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I wonder how much Black Chorus has been part of a community or your community when you think about your time at U of I.
When I came to U of I, believe it or not, it was not my first choice school. So my freshman year, I was only partially feeling campus, and my first day was pretty awful. I had a horrible major at the time. Classes were long. I was tired walking around campus and hungry, and it was the end of the day, and I get to choir, and it was like stepping into a different world. It was warm. It was inviting. The community in Black Chorus, we're a support system for each other. We love each other. We uplift each other. And that was kind of what I needed to actually almost keep me at this university, because I was not feeling it. And I love it now. But the choir has been so influential in my time here.
So do you mean you might not have even stayed at the U of I if it hadn't been for the people that you, the support system that you created through the chorus?
Yeah, going by, you know, my freshman year, it was rough. But Black Chorus definitely felt like home.
And just to add on to that, there aren't a lot of spaces and a lot of predominantly white institutions or PWIs where you can go to and be in the majority as a person of color. So I think it also gives students of color a place, you know, on campus where they can feel validated. We're singing the music that's of their culture. And so I think it gives them a chance to say, to feel important, you know, and in so many places they don't feel important. And I think at Black Chorus, it gives them opportunity to feel comfortable, to feel important, to feel welcome, to feel validated in their entire experience.
Jerry, so you're a senior, so I'm going to ask you what your most favorite memory is of being in Black Chorus so far.
I would say it would have to be the year before last when we did the last symposium. Honestly, with the conference that we run, like those 3 days, you're just going through it with everybody around you and then all the other people that you're really just meeting for the first time. And then our clinicians, too, a lot of them have been in the same seats that we've been in years back. So hearing about what they have been able to accomplish and just a lot of what they're doing now is just really inspiring. And I would say that music, the music we learned back then, that was pretty much the most joy I've had singing, because a lot of that music required so much from a musician, but also from a spirit.
Brianna, can you tell us a little bit about the symposium?
Yeah, so the symposium is a 4-day biennial conference dedicated to the study and performance of Black sacred music. And so we bring these clinicians, most of which are alums. This year we have 9 clinicians. 5 of them are U of I alums. And I mean, they're doctors and they're lawyers and they're, you know, in these high, lofty places with their careers. But they've always held on to the Black sacred music tradition. They were members of Black Chorus when they were here. So they come back, we bring them on campus, and they teach, hearkening back to what I said about Black Chorus being a purely educative experience when you do perform. They will actually give lectures and lessons on what their particular area of focus is with spiritual music, and then they teach us music. So we always start off with a song. We all sing together as a community. It's open to community members in the Champaign-Urbana community by invitation. And we start with a song. We all sing together. One of our clinicians will come and he'll give a lesson. They'll talk about a topic. Last year, I mean, we even had, you know, a lesson on why we learn things from the oral tradition, because that's how we learned music back when, you know, the spiritual was born. We learned it by mouth. Everything was oral. And so that's how we teach it. And then we go into a group rehearsal, community rehearsal. Everybody comes together and we sing again. So we start the day with song. We end the day with song. And everyone who gets to come, we give giveaways. And it's a really, really good time. And then this Sunday, at the end of the conference on Sunday, the community members that participated in the conference with us actually joins Black Chorus on stage. And they sing on stage with us. So that 5 o'clock concert, everyone's going to be on stage. That's a part of the conference that we sing. And we just give away our hearts and we give away what we learned throughout the 4 days.
McKinley, can I ask you one last question just about the U of I Black Chorus? We were just talking about how it's a space on campus. We on a campus there where African-Americans and people of color are definitely a statistical minority. I wonder, with the U of I Black Chorus, it's not just Black students, so, right? This is actually a pretty diverse group.
Of course. I would even go so far to say as Black Chorus is one of the most diverse organizations on campus. Just because it is called Black Chorus, I think a lot of people kind of get confused or they misinterpret it. We're Black Chorus because we sing the music of the African-American diaspora, but everyone is welcome, not just Black students, but everyone from everyone of other races and ethnicities. So it's really a great experience, especially if you aren't familiar with this music, because it gives you an opportunity to participate and learn about it. And it's also great for students like me, where it is like a place of cultural familiarity.
Yeah, and I just like to add on that, too, that a lot of it, even just coming in each day, it just feels like an exchange, because all of us, we're inputting our soul and our passion into the music and just internalizing it all together. And it really becomes a greater feeling of community, because the person right next to you, they can share that same feeling with you. And both of you don't even have to really say it out loud, but you can only just sing it.
So I'm afraid that's all the time we have, but I wonder if we can end on one more song. Michaela, can you tell us about this last song?
Hold On, Change Is Coming is actually one of my favorites. I have the honor of leading this song. It's a really encouraging piece. If you're ever feeling down, this is the song to pull up on your playlist.
Thanks again for being with me. Brianna Tyler is a master's student at the U of I. She's the TA for the U of I's Black Chorus. Jerry Boffor and Michaela Odom are the vice president and president. They're both seniors. Guys, thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
I always wanted to be on radio.
That's all the time we have for today and this week. So let's get you started on the weekend early by listening to some of this music from the U of I Black Chorus. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Nyla Boodoo. See you here on Monday.
Yesterday, a man stepped up to me. He said, "How can you smile when your world is crumbling down?" I said, "Here's my secret, when I wanna cry. I take a look around and I see that I'm getting by, and I hold on.
Hold on.
Cause change is coming.
Change is coming.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Don't you worry.
Don't worry about a thing.
Hold on.
Hold on.
You can make it.
You can make it.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Everything.
Everything will be alright.
Some people like to worry. Like to hide. Some people like to run away from the pain inside. Now that's your business. Do whatever you want to do. But if you don't work out, here's what you ought to do. Just hold on.
Hold on.
Change is coming.
Change is coming.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Don't you worry.
Don't worry about a thing.
Change is coming.
Change is coming.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Don't you worry.